supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a listener saved seeds from her favorite landscape plants last season and wants to use them to beautify a nearby lakeshore. Good idea or bad? We'll let you know after lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jesse, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing just ducky. Jess, how are you?
I'm good.
And where is Jesse good?
I'm good here in South Philadelphia, Passyunk Square.
Ah, yes. My kids both lived near Passyunk Square at one point, so I know that there's a great little meeting place there. And don't they have a farmer's market there right in the square in season?
That's right, the Singing Fountain.
All right, what can we do for Jesse in South Philly?
All righty. Well, my question is, I bought a house and I'm trying to fix up the small little backyard. We got some ground in there and I wanted to put in some Lily of the Valleys. And I went to the store and bought this box that had these dry roots in them. And I thought they kind of would have operated like bulbs. So I put them throughout the bed. And that was about 3 weeks ago. And I've been watering them, keeping them nice and moist. They get plenty of shade and some sun in the evening, and just trying to monitor them. And when I kind of dig them up and kind of peek on them, there's no growth. It doesn't seem like they're taken. I just want to know what the best way to ensure their happiness in there, because I would love a nice, beautiful carpet of Lily of the Valleys.
Okay, so there's two lessons here. There's two teaching moments here. And the first is an important one. It goes well beyond the plant you selected. Anytime you get something bare root, whether it's a bunch of dried up roots or something like that, or even a bare root rose or a bare root tree, there's a very simple trick that can really help ensure its survival. And that's just before you plant, take the root system or whatever you got and put it in a bucket of water for a couple of hours and let it hydrate itself as much as it can. Because otherwise, once you put it into the ground, it's not going to have that immediate access to moisture. I've done this with bare root roses that, you know, the coroner from Oz had pronounced really most sincerely dead. And they came back just beautifully. Whereby when I didn't know this, most of the bare root plants I put in did die.
Oh, man.
Well, no, because the second thing I'm about to say is you may be lucky. Now, I just happened to have a friend visiting me in the studio today, Sally McCabe from the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. And as soon as I saw Lily of the Valley, I mean, first of all, thank goodness it's in a South Philly backyard contained. Because, Sally, I mean, do you know of a more invasive?
Oh, I can think of a few more invasive, but it's up there.
Yeah. If this plant were to get into the wild, it just takes over.
But I've got a question. When you bought it in the bag and you took it out of the bag, what did it look like? Did it look like a bunch of hairy roots, or was there something fat and fleshy with a little bit of a stem?
It looked like lots of little hairy little roots. There were some that were a little more thick than others, really dry, and it was like in this really dry dirt. That's why I was kind of worried, because it didn't seem to have any sort of life in it. But, you know, the mysteries of nature involved, I don't know it too well.
It's possible that if you had done what Mike said and soaked in water for a while, you might have recovered something. But it sounds to me like it was already a goner when you got it.
Oh, man.
No, because they're a dime a dozen around the city. And you just find somebody else that has a piece and you dig some up and you've got them, because they do smell amazing.
They are.
Most of the emails we get about Lily of the Valley are, how in the world can I get rid of this?
But for that 1 week that they're blooming, it's heaven.
Oh, yeah.
The smell, it's like honeysuckle.
If this is really what you want to do, you still have plenty of time, but it sounds like you were also buying your plants at the dollar store. So we learn by failure, and as Sally said, you want to inspect the plants. You want to see big, fleshy, fat roots, for lack of a better word, and ideally with like little sprouts coming out of them. If you were to mail order them, for instance, from a reputable firm, you'd probably get better stuff than this. But I would urge you to take a ride out to your nearest local independent garden center and take a look at the quality of the plants, because so many people think they're getting a bargain and they either get dead plants or they get plants that just limp along for years and years.
Right.
You know, I would start over with high quality plants. And again, I want to warn everybody out there, this only makes sense in a contained area in the city where the plants aren't going to escape.
All right. Well,
all right.
Thank you very much, Mike and Sally.
All right. Well, good luck, Jesse, and congratulations on your new house.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Alex, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Alex. How are you, man?
I'm fantastic. It's a beautiful day in southern Ontario. It's about to be gardening season soon.
So what can we do for Alex up in the north?
Well, it's the summer. And my buddies, we have a garden in the backyard, but we're only here for 4 months, and I want to grow a watermelon. Just one. We grow strawberries and tomatoes and whatnot, but I tried to grow a watermelon last summer. I kind of forgot about it. It got to be about, I don't know, 4 inches wide, and then a rabbit ate it. So I just want to know what I can do to actually get a real watermelon.
It depends on what you mean by a real watermelon. The kind of rattlesnake melons that you see in the supermarkets, the ones that are shaped like a propane tank, they're all grown down south. They all need a long growing season. I think most of them are rated at around 120 days. That's a southern crop. But one nice thing over the years I've seen since the 90s is breeders are developing smaller, quote, icebox watermelons.
Right.
That come ripe much quicker, like after 75, 80 days. And you can grow multiples. You can grow three nice-sized watermelons on one vine. And, you know, for instance, Sugar Baby is like the classic variety. But at this time of year, you can't start from seed. You want to get a nice, healthy plant from a garden center.
Okay.
Because when I say 120 days for a rattlesnake watermelon, the big ones,
right,
that's 120 days starting with a six-week-old transplant.
Okay, so with something that's already begun growing, and I'll just put it in the ground.
Yeah, you wouldn't. You're not planting your tomatoes by seed up there, are you?
Oh, no, we are.
Really?
Yeah, we plant everything by seed. It's actually surprisingly much hotter up here than most people would expect Canada to be.
But no. I've been up to Ontario. I'm just saying you're losing like 6 weeks of good eating.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
we just go to the garden store and get some like pre-plotted plants and do that instead then.
Yeah, I mean, if you've had success so far, you can continue. But especially if you're thinking this time of year about growing watermelon, one of the nice advantages is a good local independent garden center should have a nice selection of the right size watermelons. And what you want to look at, in addition to the color and things like that, is the days to maturity.
Okay, days to maturity, right.
And the days to maturity mean that's from a six-week-old transplant or a transplant you bring home from the garden center. You put it in the ground, and if it says 55 days after that in your summer climate, you should expect your first ripe watermelon, but then the vine should continue to produce, you know, one or two more. One of the things with watermelons is after you get like three nice sized melons on a single vine, that's when you have to be brutal and start pinching off any new flowers after that, because that vine is only going to be able to give you two or three watermelons. If you make it try to make seven watermelons, you get seven lousy ones. And if you want more than that, you plant more than one vine. The secret here is, you know, you want what's called a refrigerator melon or a you know, container size melon. Sugar Baby is the classic. You can't go wrong.
Right.
And then, but you said the critters ate it. So, you know, if it's truly rabbits, you can keep rabbits out of your garden with a low fence. Where you are and where I am, rabbits don't dig. You know, that's why that's why you find their nests on the top of grass and the top of the ground. So they can't dig underground. Bugs Bunny, even though he has a Brooklyn accent, is a European hare. They're the ones that can dig over in Europe. So just a low fence, 2 feet high, that you can just walk over will keep rabbits out of your garden.
Yeah.
And you're sure it's rabbits and it wasn't mice?
It could have been anything, I think. But we got a lot of rabbits up here. So I was just going off on a limb.
And my experience with watermelons is that mice love them just as much as we do. And I'll tell you the most important thing here is the ripeness cue. So what you want to look for is a change of color on the bottom of the melon where it lays on the ground, the couche. And then the telltale sign is when the tendril nearest the fruit turns brown. The little curly Q things?
Right.
When the one closest...
When it turns brown, that's the key?
That's a good sign, yes. So you got that, you got to change of color on the ground spot, and you should be ready to rock.
Dang, awesome. Thank you.
All right, Alex?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, good luck, sir.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will talk about tomatoes, pollinators, mosquitoes, and more on Wednesday evening, May 24th at 7 p.m. at the Allentown Public Library. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with safe suggestions for saved seed and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 140th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a listener has saved seeds from her favorite landscape plants. Would it be a good idea for her to wander around a nearby lake and try to beautify the shore with the saved seeds of her plants? We'll discuss the pros and cons of such an idea after lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Brenna, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky. Brenna, how you doing?
I'm pretty dandy today.
And where is Brenna Dandy?
I am in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is southwest Michigan, in the Lower Peninsula.
All right. What can we do for Brenda in Kalamazoo?
Well, I'm dandy, but my black raspberry patch here is looking kind of orange and sad and not as green as I'd like it to be this spring.
Now, black raspberries Are you talking about what I call black cap raspberries, the first berries of the season? They grow on canes that are thin and kind of purplish in color, and they tend to be at like the margins between a garden and the woods.
Oh, that's the ones.
Okay. Now you got me worried about mine. What's going wrong with yours?
So I have like an L-shaped patch here, and last year my farmer friend came over and she said, oh, what is this? It looks like a fungus that's on your plants. And so I inspected it more and looked it up, and I realized I should probably, you know, rip out all of the infected canes. And I thought I had got all of it, but this year they're still sending up those spineless part of the canes, and it just looks like it's just growing with much, much more rust, I think it is.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I have a friend in the studio with me. She's watching me do the show today, Sally McCabe from the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. She's sitting across from me and shaking her head as if she's got a burst of understanding, which is much more than I have for this one right now. So, Sal,
he called me in as the expert because I have red hair, so I'm the specialist in
in
orange rust.
Oh, well, me too, so we must match.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
A couple of redheads. I'll be back in an hour.
Yeah. Bye. See you, Mike.
Bye.
Do you have wild raspberries near you?
You know what? I was hunting for morels a couple days ago, and I saw like a tiny bit on a patch about quarter mile in the woods past my house, but that's the only time I've seen it.
That's probably where it's overwintering. So even if you went and dug yours up, you need to be ruthless and also find where it is near you that it's harboring the fungus, because it's airborne and it comes in. And I know what you mean about it's coming up. The branches are coming up, and sometimes the leaves are a little gnarly, and they've got that beautiful, bright orange rust on them. And they come up without spines, which is, you'd think, would be an advantage. But then you don't get a whole lot of
barren.
Fruit. Yeah.
Now, Sally is thinking that rust is blowing into your garden from wild plants, which makes a lot of sense to me. But I'm going to ask a different question. Are the wild plants affected?
I just discovered them, so I haven't had time to see how their growing patterns have been affected at all.
Your black raspberries, were they intentionally planted by you, or did they just appear and you've managed them?
Oh, so I just purchased the house 2 years ago, and they were with the house when I moved in.
And they've always been infected with this rust?
I think so, yes.
Do you do anything to them? Do you feed them? Do you mulch them? Do you water them?
No, not at all.
Okay, back to you, Sal. You might be right.
Here's your best bet if you are a truly organic gardener. Get rid of that stuff. Dig it up. Get rid of it and bring in new plants. Because the plants that you buy will be probably certified. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a common thing in black raspberries. And so you can read the tag and it will say rust resistant or certified rust free, or it'll say that on the label. And then you want to keep them really clean, because cleanliness is your best bet after you've ripped up and brought in new. Make sure that the grass around them is kept
cut.
Keep the weeds off.
Yeah.
It's a fungus. It's like mildew. And it likes a damp condition. It likes still air. And if you can get a nice airflow flow going through there, keep them thin and keep them clean, you're going to have much less chance of it taking over.
And I have to agree with Sally. If you've gotten berries off of these things for a couple of years.
Stop the presses. He agrees with me on something.
I would definitely rip them out and maybe wait a year. I'm not suspicious of the ones in the woods. I think if you give fresh plants good airflow and a mulch of compost on the surface of the soil so that if any kind of disease blows in, it blows onto something that really won't help it breed, that might even eat the disease spores. But it sounds like Sally's right. I would not try to baby these plants along for years and years and be berryless. I would start over. All right.
So I am getting some fruit from mine. Is that okay to eat even if there is some fungus on the other one?
It won't kill
you. Absolutely. When we call it a disease, it's a disease of plants, not of people.
Sure, sure. Okay, well, thank you so much.
All right, Brenna, sorry. I wish we had better thoughts for you, but it sounds like this might be a start over.
Have fun ripping them out.
All right. Thank you.
All right, good luck.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Sherry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky. Sherry, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
And where is Sherry doing great?
I am in Norristown, Pennsylvania.
Norristown. Okay, just outside of Philadelphia.
Yes. And the house that I'm calling about is actually in Conshohocken.
Okay.
And it belongs to a friend of mine. And I don't have a place to garden, but she does. And I've been trying to encourage her to go more organic because I listen to your show every Saturday without fail.
Thank you.
So I told her about the ETI and the toads and everything to try to get rid of the pests in her backyard because last year she could not sit out in her backyard due to all the awful bugs.
Okay, so let's just take a break right there because they're two different things. So you're talking about she has mosquito problems.
Yes.
Okay.
And you were encouraging people to get toads attracted to their property.
Close to correct. Close to correct. But you're mixing doors and windows here. So what you want to do, and this is the perfect time of year to do it, if you generally have mosquito problems, this is the time of year to go out and buy some BTI, which is the active ingredient in those mosquito dunks and granules you see everywhere. It's a naturally occurring soil organism. It's harmless to frogs, toads, people, pets, birds, everything like that. But mosquitoes can't breed in the water. So if you deliberately put out buckets of water and take out containers filled with water and half-pint containers filled with water and put a little bit of BTI in each one, the female mosquitoes on your property will try to use that water to breed, so they'll lay their eggs, but the eggs will not hatch. And that's a great way to get rid of, limit the number of mosquitoes on your property. Because if you're getting bit near your front door or on your balcony, you bred those mosquitoes. You have clogged gutters or some other breeding ground for them right nearby. Because the females don't go very far from where they were bred because they were bred in water and they're going to go back to the water. Toads are wonderful pest eaters. I can't get this image out of my head of a toad somehow leaping up in the air and getting a mosquito. It's very emotionally satisfying. But what toads are good at is ground-level bugs. They eat slugs. They eat snails. They eat ants. They eat roly-polies. They eat cucumber beetles. They're one of the few predators that eats cucumber beetles. So they eat big prey. They don't eat mosquitoes. The only real live creatures in your landscape that are going to help combat your mosquitoes are certain species of birds and any kind of dragonfly.
Okay. So how do we get her, because she gardens, and I've been trying to get her to do a raised garden, but she gardens in the ground. And how do we get her to be able to attract these toads to her property? Is it kind of like if you build it, they will come like the Field of Dreams, or do you have to purchase them or order them like?
No, you never want to import animals like this. That can cause tremendous out of control problems. Just mention the word cane toad to anybody who lives in Florida. No, you don't want to import. And everyone has toads. If you have any level of landscape, toads are ubiquitous. Most people don't see them unless they disturb them in their hiding places during the day because the toads are nocturnal. They're out in the middle of the night doing their good work.
Mm-hmm.
But if she's a chemical gardener, I would not really ask her to move forward on this unless she goes organic first because amphibians with their porous skin are much more vulnerable to pesticides than pests are.
Mm-hmm.
If she's out there dusting seven on her vegetables, the toads are going to be killed.
Okay.
And if she's a flat earth gardener, I mean, really, there's very little that's going to get through to her. What I would do, you know, if I felt that there were some way to gain leverage, is go over there and with her, take part of her flat earth garden and build a single raised bed, 4 by 8 feet, and ask her to grow a couple of different things in that raised bed. And when she sees the difference in productivity between that and her flat earth garden, then she'll get religion. Then she'll start building raised beds, and then you can build a damp, shady spot for toads to hide during the day. But it would actually be cruel to attract toads to a garden where pesticides are being used.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate
your show.
I appreciate your missionary work. Keep at it. Good luck.
I will.
All right. Take care, Char.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Steve, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky, Steve. How you doing, man?
Good.
And where is Steve good?
In Havertown.
Havertown, Pennsylvania. What can we do for Steve in Havertown?
Okay, I have a question about blueberry chill hours.
Okay.
I've been trying to grow blueberries, and last year I had some damage to one of the summer branches. So instead of cutting it off and composting it, I thought, well, why can't I just try make a cutting out of it? So I took a couple of the cuttings, I put it in some moist peat moss, and after a couple of months, they started to root. And so I kept it in the house, figuring, oh, it's going to get cold anyway, so I must let it stay in the house and grow versus going dormant outside. This spring, I noticed there was a blossom on it, and I thought blueberries need chill hours for them to blossom, so I'm a little confused. Do they really need chill hours, or can I actually grow them as an indoor plant and still have blueberries?
I would say, yes, they need chilling hours. Different varieties need different chilling hours. And come on, man, you got one flower. You know, you didn't get any berries.
No, I didn't, but I was just hoping, well, maybe that'll solve my pest problem if I can keep them as an indoor plant versus having my birds attack them.
I doubt it. Okay, so the story of blueberries is there are many different types. The original ones, the ones that are, you know, the real species, the ones that everything came from, are plants of the relatively far north. They're very low growing, and they produce very small berries that are intensely delicious. And it's my understanding that I think just almost exactly 100 years ago, I'm remembering now that there was a press release sent to me that we didn't follow up on, that it was the 100th anniversary of the highbush blueberry being developed. And this was developed, you know, the old-fashioned way. They would take these northern blueberries, low-growing blueberries, and pick the tallest plants and keep breeding those and making them taller and taller. And then we got the high bush blueberries that predominate throughout the Middle Atlantic and even into the northern states. As you go further south, where you do have fewer chilling hours over winter, then you're getting into southern blueberries and a type called rabbit eye blueberries that have been bred to require fewer chilling hours. And as you seem to realize, chilling hours aren't freezing. It's like temperatures below 45 or 40.
Yep.
So I would say no. I mean, you are welcome to do it. You would need a good amount of room. You would need a highly acidic potting soil. You would need really bright lights. And then, you know, we know from our friends at the Philadelphia Flower Show, you can grow anything at any time. So what you would do at the end of your indoor season, then you would put them in the giant cooler that you had purchased, and you would keep them at 45 degrees from December through March or April, and then you would bring them back into their bright light, and then, right, and then you would release the mason bees that you had purchased to come and pollinate the plants. No, I know that birds are the real, quote, pest of blueberries. They love them just as much as we do. But when your outdoor blueberries set their flowers, then is the time to rig up some supports and put some bird netting over top of the supports.
I've done that, and the birds will actually pick through the fine black netting, and that just drives me crazy because they'll actually, you know, punching up squares that they'll actually get in.
Oh, you're saying they eat their way through the netting?
Yes.
Right. It's not that the netting is laying on the berries.
No, it's not laying on the berries. They'll, you know, where it's supported, they'll hang on there, and they'll just be diligent enough to punch and weaken the grids to the point that they can actually go through it. And
it sounds like you have to move up to something like hardware cloth, man.
Oh, man, that's expensive.
One other thing, if for birds especially, is get a couple of long stakes, surround the area with the stakes, and buy a very inexpensive product called Bird Scare Flash Tape. Okay. It can be highly effective. The thing about Bird Scare Flash Tape is it whips around with just the slightest breeze, and it whistles, and it cracks, and it makes all sorts of different noises. Okay. So it's very difficult for birds to get used to.
Yeah, either that or get that sprayer sensor thing and try that as well.
That's not a bad idea. If you want to hook up a motion-activated sprinkler and aim it at your blueberries, I think that would be a great idea because these birds are big enough to set it off.
Yeah.
That may solve your problem right there, and especially because it's very easy to use in the summertime when the blueberries are there. That might be a better answer than I had.
Okay.
All right, man?
All right. Thanks. Good luck. Thanks for your info.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will give a talk about birds, bees, and butterflies and how to naturally attract these fabulous flyers to your landscape on Sunday, June 4th at historic Smithville Park in Mount Holly, New Jersey. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be back with safe suggestions for sharing saved seed and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 140th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. Should you save the seeds from your favorite flowers and use them to beautify a nearby lakeside? Should you or shouldn't you? We'll tell you exactly what we think after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Kathy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it. Kathy, where are you?
I'm in Wayne, outside of Philadelphia.
Okay, Wayne, PA. Very good. What can we do for Kathy in Wayne, PA?
Well, I've got 5 herbaceous peonies that I have had in my garden, in my backyard, for about 8 or 9 years. They're beautiful every spring. This year, we had to move them because we're doing a little construction at the house. So I asked the person who helps us with landscaping to move them just, maybe about 25 feet away. And we transplanted them just when they were just sending up shoots out of the soil. And they were moved, and they sent their stems up and their leaves and buds. And just about a week ago, I noticed some stems had completely folded in half, and the stems were shriveling up and turning black, and the leaves and buds above them turning black.
Okay.
A little bit later, the leaves started curling up.
Okay, so we get the idea, Kath. We don't have to read the whole autopsy report here. Now, were you a witness while the crime was being committed, or was this done out of your eyesight? In other words, did you see the move?
No, I was not there,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Okay, mistake number one.
Yeah.
I once tried to move the peonies that came with my house 30 years ago because they're in a terrible position. They're right next to the road. They get all the salt from the winter and everything like that. And, of course, I was determined to move them, despite the fact that they bloom beautifully every year. I had not learned how to spend my leisure time correctly. And I must
can't leave well enough alone.
I must have dug down 3 feet and got nowhere near the actual root crown of the plants.
Oh.
The rule that I have for moving plants is you want to not so much move the plant, you want to move that entire spot of soil. You want to leave a hole so big that you don't see any roots. It's kind of like when our kids were 3 and 4 years old and you'd get home late at night on Thanksgiving, bring them in from the van. You know, at that point, you could bang their heads against a couple of doorways. They weren't going to wake up. And that's the same thing. If you dig a plant up completely roots and all and move that giant island of soil and then water it in well, the odds are tremendously in your favor.
Okay.
But I'm not even sure that springtime would be a good time to move peonies. My first choice would be in the fall, you know, when they're dying back. Then you would dig up the roots as the greenery has turned brown and move them. And I expect that they would not notice they had been moved then.
Okay.
Now, did you have any choice?
No. This project is something that that has developed over the winter. And when we can't wait until fall because the bed is going to be right in the middle of some construction.
Okay. No, that happened. We get that a lot. Now, when they were moved, are they moved to an area that's near a treated lawn?
Well,
so that's a yes.
Well, it's only treated with very gentle organic products.
Oh, okay. So you don't have chemical herbicides there?
No.
I think probably, you know, probably busted up the roots, probably shocked the plants at the worst time of year. Were they mulched? Were they watered afterwards?
They were watered in the first instance when they were moved. Mm-hmm. After that, it was, you know, rain every few days.
Okay.
But no more active watering.
And they're not covered with mulch or anything?
No, they're not.
Well, I'm afraid that it was just a botched move.
There's
really nothing you can do except, you know, maybe buy replacement plants now and put them in the ground. You wouldn't get flowers this year, probably. Mine are just about to open.
I do have lots of buds, and it's really only a few stems that are having trouble on each plant.
Oh, okay. So
I wonder
then,
if they might sort of limp through this season and be okay in the future. What do you think about that?
It's quite possible. What I want you to do is prune off the dead stems and pull off the folded up leaves or the browned off leaves. So there's just good green material out there.
Okay.
And then obviously, if they bloom, leave the green leaves alone. Don't dare do anything to the green leaves of the peonies. Let them just be green all summer long, and that's your biggest shot at long-term success. So
okay,
just get rid of the dead parts and light a candle to the Blessed Mother, and hopefully everything will be okay.
Will do.
All right, good luck, Kath.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Okay, enjoy the spring.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Robbie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Great to be on. Thanks so much.
It's great to have you on. Where are you, Robbie?
I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Yeah, but we need
Manayunk,
to...
Philadelphia.
Manayunk?
Yes, sir. Northwest.
The site of the great bike race?
That's right. We love Main Street. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, here at the show, we haven't heard from him for a while, but we know another Robbie.
Danger! Danger, Will Robinson! My sensors indicate an intruder is present. Danger! Danger, Will Robinson!
Yeah, that's who you were named
to
after.
My childhood, Mike. That's right.
That's it. Robbie the organic robot.
Brings me back.
All right. What can we do for the human Robbie, presumably?
Yeah. That's right.
In Manayunk.
I got some peppermint plants from the local grocery store. And actually, when I took them out, a bunch of ants were in the soil. So I had to, like, chop them all down and put them. I want to keep them inside.
Okay, wait. Wait. Now, you say that ants were in the soil.
Oh, tons of them, yeah.
In the supermarket plant.
It was kept outside, so yeah, but yeah.
One thing I just want to say before you go any further, ants are not bad outside. Ants are bad when they get into your sugar bowl inside and have to be dealt with.
Right.
But in many situations outside, ants can lean towards the beneficial. They aerate the soil. They eat weed seeds. They eat some insect pest eggs.
Oh, very good. Okay, so when we move outside, we'll make sure not to shoot them away.
Now, did you kill your peppermint plants? Did you pre-kill them before you even tried to grow them?
No. So I saved what was salvageable after, you know, getting all the roots and stuff. And so I replanted those, propagated the stems that look good. And those are doing very well. And they're very sturdy, too. They're standing up straight and they're looking good. But then I got another set of peppermint herbs, and they are just drooping. No ants in these, but they're drooping. And they're starting to bud in a lot of places along the stems. 4 or 5 inch long stems, and they're just laying horizontal along the pot. Wondering if that's unhealthy or if there's any way that they need to be sturdy and strong at standing up straight.
Just means somebody needs to take them to Linton's or to, you know, Gino's Steaks, you know, to right. Wake them up.
I guess. I don't know. Is that a bad thing that they're
yes, it's a very bad thing.
Lethargic?
Yes. So here's the deal. So you bought, quote, live herbs from the supermarket.
That's right.
Right. These things are not meant to be planted, really. Sometimes you can get away with it, but I've tried the basils many times, and I've never gotten them to survive because at that point they're full-grown plants. Now, I will say that I have bought the mint plants at a supermarket, and because mint is as invasive as bamboo, it has always thrived. So.
Right.
But you didn't try to actually plant the roots. You took cuttings and rooted the cuttings.
The first time, but the second time, no, I didn't mess with those. There were no ants to worry about inside. So the second plant, yeah, I planted the roots straight in.
Okay.
And didn't cut anything.
Well, I think you've discovered the secrets of your failure and future success. Oddly enough, something that never occurred to me with these plants, although they may be spent as being rooted plants, the nice greenery, the newest growth at the top, should be really easy to propagate. So I think you did the right thing with the first plant accidentally. You know, most great gardening is accidental. And the wrong thing with the second plant. Now, where are these members of the mint family going to go eventually?
My wife and I are renting right now, so we're not going to plant them outside. I think we're just going to keep them right by the windowsill.
Oh, well, then they're all going to get lethargic and lay down.
Oh, really?
Plants generally need light. They need sunshine.
Well, it's a big window. They get at least 6 hours, maybe even 8 hours of sunlight a day.
That's what all the boys say. It's a big window. But the sun only the sun only hits the window for so long. The window probably needs to be cleaned. You have outside space, right?
I guess we could. Yeah, it's an apartment complex. I'd have to check to see if they'd be all right with me leaving.
No. Always better to ask forgiveness than permission. Don't dare ask. Yeah, go to a garden center, get a couple of nice plastic pots with good drainage and a bag of clean potting soil. That's no chemical fertilizer, no water-holding crystals.
Right.
And make a nice mix of, you know, 50-50 potting soil and compost and fill your little containers with it. And then put one of your rooted cuttings into each container. In a couple of months, you'll have more mint than you know what to do with. And because it's in a container, it'll be really well behaved. But inside, it's always going to struggle. I mean, it might do okay if you had like a bay window where it was actually exposed to the sun on all sides.
Mm.
But most sunny windowsills are Latin for, oh, that's why your plant died.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, good luck, Rob.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Is it wise to spread seed in the wild? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started by reading this week's question.
I'd be happy to. Pauline in Reading, Massachusetts writes, I saved seeds from some of my favorite perennials last season. Do you think they would germinate if I were to walk around a lake and drop them here and there? If not, what can I do with them? I'm just trying to make the world a better place. How nice. It sounds a little bit like your old friends in the Green Gorilla Gardening Group seed bombing a vacant lot.
Yeah, except that a lakeshore is not a vacant lot. You can do a lot of damage to a wetland by randomly spreading seed around. And my spider sense started tingling independently of the water angle on this one, as I fear there might be some problem plants involved.
Didn't she say wildflowers?
You know, no, but that's what I thought when I first read her email. Then I went back and checked it more carefully. Quote, seeds from my favorite perennials.
And that's bad?
Well, it means that the plants could be very long-lived if they do germinate, and if the list does include problem plants, it won't be a one-year problem. Obviously, the devil here is in the details, so I emailed her back to ask what specific plants we're talking about.
Her response, I have a mix of sunflowers, phlox, coneflower, black-eyed Susan, and rose of Sharon. I know my idea may sound crazy, she continues, but I couldn't stand the thought of just tossing them in the compost. Well, are any of those a potential problem?
Oh, yeah, the rose of Sharon. Whoop, 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 danger, danger. It's not a rose of any kind. It's a hardy hibiscus, and I mean hardy as an invasive.
Ooh, how invasive is it?
It is so invasive, Johnny. It was named Weed of the Week by the USDA Forest Service back in 2006, where they described this Asian native as, quote, a prolific cedar with a deep taproot that is difficult to remove once the plant is 2 or 3 years old. Listed as officially invasive by at least 4 different states, including Pennsylvania, it has, quote, escaped intended plantings to invade, crowd out, and displace more desirable native plants. I've seen this happen in my own landscape. One of these things just appeared in the front yard a bunch of years ago, and it is now huge. And I have to keep pulling up the volunteers that show up several yards away from the parent every season.
Why don't you just cut it down?
Well, it blooms late in the season when there aren't a lot of other things in flower, and it attracts pollinators and hummingbirds who don't have a lot of other sources of pollen and nectar at that time of the year. I do pull up those volunteers before that famous taproot can become established, and I've been keeping a close eye on the woods. The minute I see that one has gotten away from me and is growing in a wild area, I'm going to cut it down, cut mine down, and nail a coffee can over the stumps.
And if these plants, quote, appeared next to a lake, there probably wouldn't be a human caretaker to try and control them.
Nope. The odds are good that that lakeside would be a forest of hardy hibiscus in 20 years. Or even worse, that the display would attract the attention of invasive plant eradicators spraying potent chemical herbicides to try and get rid of it. You know, there's just a big difference between sowing something like this in a wild area and growing it in your own landscape. And if you really want a rose of Sharon and you're starting fresh, you can avoid potential problems by planting one of the sterile cultivars that are available. But the important thing to remember here is that you shouldn't go planting plants like this in wild areas. You should only plant things that are heavily researched plants that are native to that region.
And one of my favorite Mike McGrath quotes, just because you have a lot of something doesn't make using it a good idea. So she should keep it at home, so to speak.
No, not at all. I'm a little surprised that she saved seeds without seeming to have had a plan for them. But many gardeners would welcome coneflower seeds and sunflowers, which are actually annuals, not perennials. Maybe even they'd take some Rose of Sharon seed with a little bit of warning. Correctly labeled, she could also donate the seeds to a public library that has a lending library of seeds. Or she could take them to a local seed swap. The master gardener volunteers at her local county extension office should know where and when such things are happening locally. And you know, I'm going to go back to something you mentioned way back in the beginning. Rolling the seeds into balls of mud and tossing the resulting seed bombs into vacant lots in a big city. Now, not the ones that are going to spread, like phlox and Rose of Sharon, but the pretty non-invasive plants here, like the sunflowers, echinacea, and black-eyed Susan. They would brighten the day of passers-by and make life much better for local bees and beneficial insects. But, you know, that's only if they're sorted out. If she really has a, quote, mix of seeds, like in a jar, it is compost this season.
Ah, but armed with this knowledge, she can carefully harvest and label this year's crop.
And then she can safely yell, "Bombs away!" Well, those sure were some enlightening ideas about using saved seed safely, now wasn't they? Luckily for you, the Question of the Week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the Question of the Week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden Question of the Week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to hammer my hibiscus if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email with your location. You're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse with your location, teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location, and where you will find the answers to all those questions you are going to send us. Audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our non-invasive webmasters are Rich Banowitz and Larissa Sapko. Sunny Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Nothing Phlox or Flummoxes, our editor, Al Banks. Brett the Viking Raider wants to know exactly where this lake shore is. I'm CD Mike McGrath, and I'll plant myself where I'm sure to see you again next week. What can you expect to hear next week? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I have no idea what we're going to do, only that it will be fun and that I will get into trouble. Plus your fabulous phone calls.